at it very closely. They are looking at it very closely. And I just said it today. I used the word for the first time, I think, in terms of what we're doing. I'm viewing our great citizens of this country to a certain extent and to a large extent as warriors. They're warriors.
One day, my grandson said to me, "Grandpa, were you a hero in the COVID-19 pandemic?" And I said to him, "No, I'm not a hero. But I FaceTime with many of them."
You know, a lot of those men were just boys. Just boys who suddenly had to stay home and play video games. Sometimes I'd be playing video games all day long.
Every day with the Sweatbats. Sweatbats Monday. Sweatbats Tuesday. Sweatbats Wednesday. Every day it would be Sweatbats. I can't hold.
Well, one day I was staying at my house and I got my Instacart order. Now, on Instacart, I asked for garlic cloves. And when it came, I got crushed garlic. Now, I gotta tell you, you can't do everything you can do with a garlic clove that you can do with crushed garlic. Now, luckily, I was just making some French bread with this. So I learned to make do.
Yeah, I thought about life before a lot. You know, I had this... My fuck buddy. She told me I couldn't come over anymore. I told her, "Baby, this whole thing is just a hoax."
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Friday, everyone. Welcome to Lower Your Expectation. I'm Justin Walker, otherwise known as Jaywalk. That's a nickname that has surprisingly gone all the way across the country with me. It's funny, I just told like one other person that I was Jaywalk, and now my Californian friends call me that too. But anyways, I'm so happy that you come on my first episode. I want to thank DJ Saki Bomb for coming up with that intro for me. That was a super fun little DJ thing I asked her to do. I was going to try to do it myself, but I figure why not reach out to my friends for a easy birthday gift, which today is my 32nd birthday. I have been spinning around this solar system 32 times now. I started my day off way too late. I was planning on waking up at like 4 a.m., straight up Jocko Wilking style, or Wilco's, I think it's Wilco's, you know, get up 4 a.m. like every other billionaire on Earth. But of course, the alarm came off, and I was like, you know what, it's my freaking birthday, I'm not going to just wake up at 4 a.m., I'm too lazy for that. So, I ended up just hitting the old snoozer over and over and over again until about 7 o'clock, and then I realized that it's going to get hot today, so if I want to record anything, I need to do it before like noon. I live in a small cabin in Santa Barbara with a large skylight. And even though like the temperature only gets up to about like 77, it's funny that now is hot for me. That's too much to handle. So it's at about 73 now, and the sun hasn't come through my skylight. So I'm trying to take advantage of the early daytime to do this. And instead of most birthdays where I just get stoned and stay in my bed and watch TV, it's kind of nice that today I'm doing something productive. I'm doing something that has been on my mind for a long time. I've wanted to do this podcast pretty much since I've started podcasting. And, you know, a lot that's held me back was that I was afraid of speaking my mind to, you know, people I work with and respect. This show is kind of a disclaimer for people about what my sort of sense of humor is. My sense of humor is very mean. It always has been. It comes from my mom. One of my favorite stories with my mom told me was that one time she was helping my little sister register for school. So she goes to the high school and she has this thing where if she sees a funny moment, like she'll take advantage of it. She'll jump right on it with like the straightest face ever. And I love it. But most people do not. So anyways, she was at this high school registration with my teenage sister. And basically at one point she was like, you know what? You don't need this. You're pretty. Okay. Pretty girls don't need to go to school. All right. Like, you know, all you got to do is find a rich man and you're going to be set. You don't need to like waste your time at this school. And all the other moms around her got very upset, like blocked her off Facebook and stuff. And she just went into it. She's like, look, you know, your daughter might not be as attractive as mine. You know, I know she might need to find herself a career, but Emily does. I'm sorry. I had to say her. Maybe I should bleep out her name. Whatever. She's my sister. Emily, you know, doesn't need this. You know, she's a perfectly pretty girl who can just find a rich man and doesn't need any of this schoolwork. Obviously, she's joking. Obviously, she doesn't really think that women don't need to be educated if they're hot. But she could see the button and she pushed it. And I like that. I like people like that. I like those situations. Whenever I go to open mic nights, I can't help but cheer on people who are doing bad. They're just it's mean, and it's just especially if they're cocky about it. If they think they're doing a good job, and they're kind of like starting to get defensive about it, because everyone else is like, oh no, just get them off the stage. Like we don't want to you know hear any more of this, and you know they feel like they're getting their time wasted. But to me, I love it. I love seeing the sweat on people on stage because it's hard. It takes a lot of courage to do. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, too, it's not anything that important. I think that's what's weird to me whenever people get really upset over kind of small jokes and stuff is that in the grand scheme of things, is it really like that big of a deal? Like it's just, you know, it's someone on stage, like, you know, making a fool of themselves. Like that's it. I think it's funny, but, I have been known to be drunk at open mic nights and tell them to keep going, just to, like give them a cue, like I'm part of the venue to tell them to keep on going. My other comedian friends don't like that so much, but speaking of them, you know, I was very lucky to come out here in California and find friends in comedy. Never really found that in Texas. I mean, obviously I know a lot of funny people. My roommate is one of the funniest dudes on earth, just naturally is hilarious. Doesn't need jokes. He has a few good jokes, but you know, he just has that. And like in comedy is this thing that, you know, it's so easy that everyone thinks they deserve to be funny. And most people are not, probably including me. I've learned while I've been putting together this podcast that I am not just like out the door hilarious. It's hard like to figure out like what topics you're going to say. I'm going to talk a little bit later in the show about how I failed getting guests on this show because of a lack of preparation and all kinds of other issues. So, yeah, like I was talking about, you know, comedy is hard. I think it's kind of like whenever you watch someone on a game show and you're like, dude, what, these questions are so easy. I would be a millionaire if I was there. Like, I know exactly the answers here. Like, what's wrong with these people? And then whenever you're actually there, you just kind of clamp up and can't remember anything. That's very similar to even my experiences with writing and producing this podcast. Even right now, in the silence of my cabin, as I speak into this microphone, it's weird. And I hear myself through the headphones, so I know how close I am and stuff like that. But I've already noticed while I'm recording that this is going to be very chopped up. This is not going to be kind of just me live. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Ah, dude, here's my hilarious story for the day. No, I'm not at that skill level yet. And I'm kind of hoping, you know, with this first episode that really it's just training. You know, whenever I was working on movies, you know, they would always say, like, write your first script and then just throw it away. And that's kind of what this is. But, you know, I think it's kind of fun on my birthday that most of the people are going to be listening to this, probably all of them. It's just my friends. So this is what they call a friendship simulator, where you can just imagine me hanging out with you somewhere, and you don't even have to buy me sushi or any sort of gifts. You can just listen to my voice. So I woke up today, finally about 7 a.m. I live in a small guest cabin in a larger house complex out here in Santa Barbara. It is a very, very small cabin. It is pretty much like a room, but it has like a lot of cool outdoor space. And the truth is I got it at a steal. I got it at like the best deal in the world. And I've just held on to it for dear life because, you know, cheap and Santa Barbara don't go in the same, category, especially, you know, whenever I live like a bike ride to the beach. It's very, very hard to find anything cheap. And I found this lady, who had a little like guest cottage, and, she asked me if I was okay without having a living room. And my response was that it's so freaking beautiful out here all day that I don't really need one, you know, that was cool. So I've been in here now for over 3 years. It's kind of insane. You know, I think the only downsides that do kind of suck is with friends over. I don't really have the space to have like guests over. And I always joke whenever I go on dates with women, like I have to like close the deal before they get to my house. Like there is no Netflix and chill in Jaywalk's cabin. Like you get in the cabin, you have to get in the bed. Whether you're a friend or foe, you have to sit on the bed. You have to sit with me. I found that is a good strategy. Like I have a chair where I'm actually sitting right now and podcasting with all my computer stuff. And then behind me is my bed and has like a TV and everything. And I found usually the move is that I go, oh yeah, you go in the bed and I'll sit here. but still that part kind of does suck. And having my friends from out of town, you know, being able to move to such like a paradise location and then not really having like couches and stuff for my friends to crash on can be kind of tough, but it's still, it's doable. I mean, I've done it twice now. I've had two freaking dudes lie on the floor in here, twice. I've had them over. Whenever I first moved here, I was like, fuck it. Like, I was like, I'm inviting all my friends. There's no point in me paying rent if I can't have friends over here anyways. So I was having a lot of friends over. The other downside is that I don't have my own shower. I do have to share it with the main house. Not with as many people most of the time, actually due to this terrifying virus. No one else is really in the main house, like visiting and stuff. So, you know, I go in once a day, usually as soon as I wake up in the morning. So that's what happened this morning is I woke up at 7 a.m. and went in to take a shower and I totally slipped and fell on my ass. And I don't think I've ever done that. And I was just like laughing to myself that like, okay, this is 32 years old. This is some fucking old man shit where you're slipping in the shower. And my landlady's boyfriend came, heard me fall. It sounded bad. Like it was just a massive wipeout. And he asked how I was doing. I'm like, oh no, I'm fine. Bathroom's super nice, by the way. It was like redone, had all this new tile and stuff. So I was most worried about that. I was like, oh God, please tell me I didn't like bust out a freaking tile or something. But I didn't. I ended up just bending the shower curtain. It was an aluminum shower curtain to about a 30-degree angle. As soon as that happened, I decided I was going to just fix it really quick in the shower, and I couldn't. It was bent so bad that you couldn't pull the rod apart and stuff, and like I couldn't just leave it. So I texted my landlady and told her that I fell. I didn't break anything, but I did bend the shower curtain rod, and I need to go fix it. I actually have a pretty sweet selection of tools, thanks to my ex-girlfriend for giving me a bunch of awesome tools, including stuff I didn't even know I had. Like I had a plastic mallets and some clamps and stuff, which worked out pretty good. But I am not a carpenter, so it was just silly. It was 3 hours of me trying to bend this friggin' aluminum rod in a straight angle and trying all kinds of ridiculous stuff. Like I was strapping it to a post in my house and hitting it with the hammer. I was like trying just to bend it like I was the Hulk, just trying to bend it over. That didn't work. And I finally got to the point, which everyone loves whenever they're trying to fix something, where you make it worse, where I realized that I bent it in such a way that the rod inside now would not move. Like there was no adjusting it or getting it back on. And so then the plan immediately turned into just like fix what you just now broke, you idiots. And I looked on Amazon really quick to see how much a replacement shower curtain rod was. And it's like $30. So at that point I was like, okay, 3 hours of work for $30 is not worth it. And I just kind of half-assed put it back up in the shower. I'm the only one who uses it now because she now shares it with her boyfriend who lives in the house too, which is fantastic. She shares a bathroom in his room. The only reason I had to fix it up again was so that I could take a shower tomorrow without spraying water everywhere or maybe wrapping the curtain around myself or something like that. But I got it back up, on the wall, did a little YouTube search on how to fix the shower curtain, and got it worked out. Then I came inside my cabin and got the AC as rocking as I could get it. It's kind of sad that I had to get an AC, but I've become so acclimated to this just gorgeous weather that if it is like above like 75, I'm like, I get all hot and sweaty. And so I have a little portable AC unit that I just kind of roll out of my storage shed and turn on if I ever see the temperature getting up, which it looks like it is today because we have a northern wind coming from the desert, which creates the, I think it's called the sundowner effect. That's meteorologist Jaywalk for you. We get hot, dry winds from the north. So I think that's going to happen today. But I've just been kind of cranking on the AC on and off while I'm talking, and it seems to be working out just fine. So I thought a good topic I could discuss on this first show, especially since most of my listeners are going to be my friends back in Texas, is sort of the differences between California and Texas. I've loved California my entire life. Like it has been where my soul has been since I moved there as a little kid, since I moved to Texas. I mean, I was born in Los Angeles County and then lived with some family in Thousand Oaks until I was about 3 or 4 years old. This story has changed in my head so much because as a little kid, I loved telling stories. I loved embellishing stories. So I would tell people like I just moved from California, like all the time, almost probably until like high school, it would be, oh, I moved here whenever I was like 10. Oh, I moved here when I was like, you know, 8. And it would just go down as I got older and got more guilty about lying about my life. It's became the truth, which is like, it's like 3 or 4. It was like right before elementary school. It might have been even earlier. I might have lied to myself so much about this that I was barely in California. But however long I was, it had such an impression on me. It's hard, you know, to people who just kind of come here, like my little sister, whenever she visits, You know, I can tell that, you know, she likes the ocean and is like, oh yeah, it's pretty. I get it. You know, palm trees, legal weed, that's cool. But you know, she likes Texas. That's where she was born. But there's something about that I was born here. It's like embedded into me that, for my entire life in Texas, I wanted to be here so fucking bad. Like just every time I would get any amount of money to vacation, I would come here and I would, you know, get a car and go up and down PCH and just be so jealous of people my age who were here just living. I got into a film festival whenever I was 20 in Ventura and I was handing out flyers to people to watch my movie, which no one came and saw. But I remember handing out flyers to this like group of 20-year-olds and just like thinking like, you guys don't know how fucking lucky you are. Like you don't understand, you know, how much like I would kill to have your lifestyle, to just live here and not just kind of dream about it. So, you know, I felt that way for years and years and years. Every single year I would find a way to come visit this place. And like be in tears whenever I would leave. Like many, many times I would be crying because it felt like I was a failure, that I was failing at life, that I had this thing that I wanted so bad and I just wasn't getting it. I was going to live in North Texas and I was just going to have to deal with that. You know, there's something whenever, if you ever visit here and you come back, like come from Dallas to here, whenever you get to DFW airport and you go outside, it's depressing. You just feel that sticky hot heat. And it's just, you know, it's just a little bit dirtier. Now, granted, I live in a gem of the coast. You know, SB Santa Barbara is not Los Angeles at all. I've visited LA a lot. I like going there for fun. I love Hollywood. Hollywood's super funny. But it's like a Dallas or something. It's a big city. It's a lot hotter. I think because of the way the air kind of traps in the cities and stuff, and it's kind of a little grosser, and you know, you have a lot more homeless, and a big thing too is billboards. One of the cool things about the county that I'm in is that there's no billboards on the road. It doesn't seem like a big deal to you if you're used to seeing them all the time, but it's such a little cherry on top to life out here. That just whenever you're driving on these open, like, you know, roads down the coast, you don't have some freaking, like, you know, injured, call 1-800 now. You don't have any of that crap, like, in your peripheral visions. You just got the ocean and the mountains, and it's so good. I love it. So, you know, that's, those are the good things. So the weather for sure. I mean, it's not even a fight. Like there's, you know, I'll tell people in California about what the weather was there and they're like, oh yeah, you know, it was like, it's kind of hot. Right. And stuff. I'm like, dude, it's triple digits like every year for summer. It's freezing in the wintertime. And then in between we have tornadoes. Isn't that fun, guys? So whenever you're not freezing or burning, you might get sucked up into the sky. Sounds great. So it just wins that hands down. The second thing, you know, to kind of compare is work, is business and stuff. And this, you know, it's easy to put it right away for Texas. Obviously, you know, a lot easier on taxes and regulations and stuff. But you have to also consider talent. Like there's a lot of talent that comes to the West Coast. And I can feel it. That's one thing out here that I really like, at least before this awful pandemic started, was that I could meet really smart pioneers and stuff. And not that we don't have that in Texas. There are most of my friends are in that same category. But they're just, you know, this is the home of Silicon Valley. It's kind of interesting that this is the home of Silicon Valley. That is also the same place where the kind of hippie revolution happened. Which I always thought was interesting, that the same place where, you know, people decided to like tune in and turn off and expand their minds and try to develop a better world. They actually did it, but they didn't do it with like lots of unprotected sex and LSD. They did it with computers, which I think is awesome. You know, they are changing the world. Our world is completely different thanks to these hippies in Northern California. It's freaking awesome. So there's that. So, you know, I kind of give it like a tie on that note. When it comes to business, it's kind of a tie. Like, yeah, it's going to be a lot more expensive out here, you know, to some ridiculous degrees. You know, I actually stopped having the idea of running a company out here just because it was silly. I'd have to pay so much money and have so much worry just to say I have an employee whenever having an employee was like hard enough, like finding enough work for me and other people. And then it was like, oh, wow, you want to find work for other people too? Well, you better fucking pay up and you better write out these forms and you better have all this. So, you know, like many other Californians out here who've learned this lesson, you just bend the rules as hard as you fucking can. This is a state of scofflaws. Like they're not breaking the laws, but you know, we're going to try to kind of, especially when it comes to taxes and stuff, they're going to try our best to find every little out and every way to get around it. For the record, that's not an attitude that I like at all. I hate whenever we have rules and people just ignore them instead of like saying, maybe we shouldn't have this rule. It's kind of like with legal weed out here. For a while it was just medical. Since the 90s, you had to have a medical card. And the thing with the medical card was that everyone lied about it. Like it just, the entire state had this system where if you have $35 and you're willing to lie, you can smoke weed. And, you know, It's just a dumb way to go about it. It's like just make it legal. Just make it to where we can do it instead of going through all these kind of dumb hoops. And the other side of that equation, like anytime you have a rule or a law like this, is that the people who are really good at breaking rules, especially people who have money, get away with it. And the people who aren't get in trouble for it, you know. So before, you know, we had the prop out here to just make it just freaking legal, like as legal as booze, basically. You know, it always pissed me off that you'd have like Seth Rogen like, oh, smoking a bong on TV, like, you know, actual weed, and then, oh, but I'm sick, I got my medical card and that's why. And then, you know, some random kid on the streets of LA will get busted for having a joint. We'll go to jail for that. That's not fair. And that's, you know, God, this is what a funny podcast I'm making right now. I'm ranting with people about their morals and laws and stuff, but, you know, that's just a philosophy I have about so many things, is that, you know, I love following rules. Like, you know, it's funny that my name's Jaywalk because I hate jaywalkers. I can't stand it. Whenever I'm out on my bike or something and someone just runs across the road, whenever there's a sign, and even whenever I go out with friends downtown and stuff, and, you know, we're at the little red hand, which says, no, don't go, you know, the little red hand says, don't walk. And inevitably, you know, you kind of scan back and forth, and then you just go across, you just say, fucking go. Guys, that timer on there is 12 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, walk. Is that really an outrage? Is that really so fucking hard to do? It's just stay there and just wait at max 12 seconds. So I always just stay. And it's funny, and people, you know, think I like have a mental problem, which I probably do. But I've been on dates before, and I will just shout like, don't walk across it. No, it says no. It says don't walk. There are rules, Donnie. This is not NOM. So I don't jaywalk, and I hate jaywalkers. Finally, in the Texas and California thing, I talked about the weather and kind of business and work. And now for the people. And this is probably the most controversial one, because I've gone back and forth on it a lot. Before I moved here, I would joke that the people kind of sucked, that, you know, the people are not as good as the weather. but I didn't really know. I just assumed that, because it made me sound interesting to say that I knew about California, which I really didn't. I would just go there. I know my family. So my family are good people. So I shouldn't say that, because only Californians I know are like blood relatives. But I used to say that. And then one day I was at a bar in Texas and I said that, and this woman stopped and came up to me and she said, "You don't know what you're talking about." I was like, "What?" And she said, "You said that Californians are bad people. I'm a Californian and we're not. And I think you should like educate yourself better." Like, basically gave me a whole lecture about it. And I was like, well, you know, maybe you're right. So, you know, that's, it's not fair. It's not fair to judge anyone. Just in the same way out here, you know, people go, "Oh, you're from Texas. Oh, you got a horse and stuff like that." That's not cool to think that, you know, that we're all like racist Republicans, and that's not cool either, but it goes the other way as well. I would say for sure the hate gives way more Texans than Californians. You know, whenever I came here, when I first like finally moved here, being Texan was cool. It still kind of is. It's funny that I pined so much for being a Californian, you know, earlier in my life. And now that I'm here, like, I love that I'm a Texan. Like, it's an interesting, switcheroo of the whole thing. As a matter of fact, whenever I first came here, a lot of guys were like, "Dude, you have to play up the accent. Like, you will get laid immediately if you can just go, 'Oh, well, what's going on here?'" "Well, shut my mouth. Oh, look at this pretty little miss." Nah, you know, so I didn't do that. Sometimes I will. Sometimes the accent will come out, especially if I talk about Texas. If I start talking about Texas, I start sounding a little bit more Texan. And I think that it's an identity thing. I think that there's a great movie on Netflix. It's called Why Do I Sound Gay? And it's all about a question that everyone thinks, which is, why do gay people sound like they're gay? Why do they actually sound that way? And spoiler alert, kind of at the end of the whole thing, they have a really great hypothesis about it, which is that it's identity. That the way that you talk, even the way I'm talking right now, is how I want people to think of me. It's just like with clothes or anything else. Like you actually develop a voice consciously because you want people to think of you a certain way. You know, like if you were a gangster kind of rapper guy, you know, you'll talk that way. You know, if you're a farmhand, like my dad is an Ohioan who lived in California most of his early life. And now he lives in a ranch in Texas, and he talks just like a cowboy, because that's his identity. He wants to be a cowboy, and so that's how he talks. So that identity, you know, as a Texan, I've appreciated a lot more. And I find out here, I hear, you know, nothing. You know, you get the steers and queers jokes, and they do think that we're like dumb and kind of hillbillies sometimes. But for the most part, it's interesting. They're like, "Wow, like, that's cool. You know, this is a Texan." You know, they think that we're badass. It doesn't work that way the other way around. in Texas, I mean, this is mostly what I hear, you know, comments from friends on Facebook and stuff. But, you know, they think that we're all gay, and that we're all like, you know, just ruining the country, and, you know, and just like just bad people. There's way more venom the other way, which is something I hope that I can, you know, kind of educate my Texan friends in that. And just to kind of think about that, is that every time you bring down a Californian, they're bringing you up, baby. Like, they're singing your praises, and you're, you know, getting pissed off that they're moving in, and, you know, telling them to turn back and that they're ruining Austin and stuff. And they just like you guys. They think you're big old Texan sweethearts. So just relax. Now, with that said, my personal experiences with people, whenever it comes to things that are like kind of serious and like, you know, like favors and counting on people, I gotta go with the Texans. I think it's just because out here it is such a dog eat dog environment because of how fucking expensive it is to be here, that you really can't give as much of the benefit of the doubt to people. Like, you're always kind of ready for someone to fuck you over. Like, you're just waiting for that to happen. I think a lot of the reason I've done well out here and have kept relationships because I refuse to have that attitude. Like, I just don't, you know, I care and respect for a lot of people. And, you know, whenever I first came here and started working with people, you know, the first thing I would say to them is that I will not let you down. Like, if I tell you I'm going to do something, it's going to get done. I do not accept failure. And, you know, out here, failure is sometimes expected. That's the thing. Is that they're kind of counting on that you're going to show up late, that you're not going to do this right. Like, everyone's constantly just waiting. And sadly, you know, you have to. Whenever I was running my production company, it was hilarious. Not hilarious. I ended up just having to laugh about it because it was, otherwise it would just piss me off to no other. But if I tell people to have a meeting at like 4 o'clock, that is the earliest they will come, they will show up. Saying 4 o'clock means that they will stop what they're doing and then come to your meeting at that time, maybe. So I had to just count, like, for grown-ass adults, I had to say in my mind, okay, we're going to meet at 4:30. And if I book a conference room, I need to make sure I have like 2 hours ahead of time because these people never show up on time. I would have to do that because these grown-ass adults could not show up on time. And, you know, you get the messages and stuff. Oh, it's traffic and whatnot, which is the worst excuse ever. Don't ever blame traffic, okay? Traffic is a constant. Complaining about traffic is like complaining about the weather. You have to factor it in. You have to factor in that, yes, we live in Southern California. There's going to be traffic. You're going to have to deal with it. But, you know, the flip side is that, you know, whenever you're late yourself, it's not the end of the world. You know, I would get like chewed out at work in Dallas and stuff for being late. Like, you know, oh, you wasted all of our time and all this shit. Here, you just kind of like, oh, whatever. You just kind of just sit down. And, you know, it's okay. But I can't be late to a lot of things. I am, even though I'm naturally very disorganized and stuff. Usually with what I do is doing tech work and stuff. And if you show up like on time, it's so ridiculously embarrassing because it's this whole group of people who are waiting for you, even though you're not the star here. Like, you know, you're not the talent. You're the monkey who's running the equipment. But they can't start without you, and it takes time to set up. It's not immediate. So, you know, especially for me, I get very sweaty. I get it from my dad. I have a tendency to get super sweaty whenever I'm nervous. It is not a good, sexy look whatsoever. And a lot of people out here do not use AC. So I have, you know, luckily not a lot, but one or two, usually caused by someone else's kind of fuck up. But I've had to rush to like set up microphones and stuff for people. And, I just turn into this sweaty big pig, just tons of sweat everywhere. And it looks like I'm on like MDMA. It's not a good look. So whenever it comes to people, you know, I gotta give a little bit more for Texans. It's probably just 'cause I know them the most, but, whenever it comes to, you know, someone dependable, like a, you know, a friend that you don't kind of have to question, like, are they really my friend? Are we just like kind of associates because they need something? Like, are we just having fun, you know, because we're drinking and stuff? Like, I know I have friends out in Texas. I know I have people who actually legitimately care about myself, about how I'm doing. And, you know, I had a really sweet moment whenever I first moved out here. I was having some hard times with money, which I am now too, thanks to the virus. And one of my old clients, and I'm going to give him a free plug here. His name is Mike French. He is the owner of Air 817. It's an AC company out of Dallas-Fort Worth, and the owner of OC Burger, which ironically is a California-themed burger place that I ran like ads for and did like everything for all of their marketing and not quite marketing, more like design. I designed their menus and stuff like that. But he's always been a huge mentor of mine, like someone who really is looking out for me. And whenever I first moved here, I gave him a call. And you have to understand too, whenever I came out here, I was like kind of saying F you to people like him and my other clients who were giving me a fine way of living. And I was like, no, but I want to be next to the ocean and I want to smoke weed without getting in trouble. So I came out here and I had nothing. Like I had no business and just was just broke and, you know, barely paying rent and stuff. And, this guy, Mike, called me, asked me to do some stuff and asked me how I was doing. And I told him, I was like, you know, not too good. Like, you know, I kind of need some cash right now if you have any work. And he told me to go on my Cash App, make a request for whatever I needed, and that he would find something for me to do, because whatever I ask for, I'm worth. And this was the nicest thing, one of the nicest things I've ever heard. Like it made me tear up. And most of my clients in Texas are like that. Even today, you know, there's many I know that I could call and would help me out, and I'll find them out here. You know, I have confidence and I have found a few. It's funny because most of them are not from this state. I find people from Michigan and Arizona are really, really cool. Like people from the Northeast, or not the Northeast, but kind of the Midwesterners who came out here, like we're just on the same team. Like we both were here for a better life and weren't just, you know, born to rich parents. And, you know, so at the end of the day, whether California wins. Business, kind of a tie. I'm still going to say a tie, just because it's easier to do business in Texas, but there's kind of more lucrative work and talent out here. And then for people, I'm going to say Texas. You guys get it. They are nicer.
Herb. Yo, I don't think we should talk about this.
Come on, why not?
People might misunderstand what we're trying to say, you know?
No, but that's a part of life.
Come on,
let's talk about
COVID-19.
Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about
COVID-19.
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 The people at home or in the crowd. It keeps coming up anyhow. Don't decoy, avoid, or make void the topic.
So I heard about this first, about the end of January. I was in Las Vegas, and I noticed that they had all of this Chinese stuff up, like all these Chinese like rooms for gambling that were just for them. Like they didn't have any English signs up and they were totally empty, which by the way, if you're in that situation, just put up like an English sign or something. I mean, like Americans love that kind of shit. You know, they will come in and enjoy it just fine. But even I was like, I'm not going in there. Like they're just looking at me like, what is this like European white guy doing around our tables? And the reason why they did that is because it was Chinese New Year. I actually got some cool Year of the Rat stuff while I was there at a flea market, but it was Chinese New Year, and there's no Chinese people around. Usually they go out and travel, but I think there was like some restrictions started then. So that was the first thing I thought was that first like sign that things are kind of weird was, like I said, seeing like all these casinos just Chinese it up. Just everything is all Chinese New Year, Year of the Rat related, and no Chinese people. So, you know, I don't know if that was before or after the restriction on the travel, but I didn't see them. And then, you know, like February, not really a big deal. I'd say about the end of February, whenever, I think for everyone, I think the main moment that I realized that this is like not a joke and kind of everyone else is, and everybody canceled South by Southwest. I've never gone, something I've always wanted to do. But I think that was for everyone, including me, kind of the first like, holy shit, like this could be a big deal. Like this might be a big deal. And then on top of that, about the end of February, I had this genius idea that I was bragging to people about, that I am going to play the stock markets. I'm going to be little Gordon Gekko Jaywalk, and I'm going to play the market. And I had a great year last year, made more money than I ever have before, which is not that much. It's like I made like a normal person's salary, and I was just so stoked. And so, you know, I was like, you know, I'm not going to have these bankers just take my cash and, you know, just sit on it. I'm going to fucking put it in the market. So I started investing in stuff, and, you know, I had a little portfolio going with a bunch of stocks. And then once, things really started about like the first part of March, they started really taking like a tumble on the stocks, and I could see that every day. And, you know, they say, just let it go. Don't try to get back in on it. But right around the same time that happened, I got laid off from another job, which was kind of unrelated, unless this chick has straight up like psychic powers and could see this coming, which in that case, bravo, well done. You picked the perfect time to fire everyone, because I got laid off. And so I was like, well, shit, you know, if this like starts, you know, losing me a bunch of money in the stock market, like I might have to pull out, like I might have to, you know, take out my money because, you know, I just can't afford it right now. I might actually need that cash to just spend on normal stuff. So I looked at it and I talked to a friend of mine who is the inverse bellwether for stock markets. Anytime I've asked this person their opinion on the markets, every single time I should have done the opposite. This person told me not to invest in Tesla at $250 a share. That it's too high. And then I was like, okay. And then again, whenever this started going down, they were like, no, don't sell. They were like, you can't. As a matter of fact, you should buy more because they've gone down a bit. I was like, you know what? I'm going to sell half my stocks. So I sold half my stock positions. And even with that, like I was losing like $50 a day, just every day. Just having the privilege of watching $50 gone, just boop, gone, gone, gone. And so I started freaking out and I sold off another half. And then I had this another genius idea. I was like, you know what? I'm going to short this fucking market. I'm going to pull some big short, Ryan Gosling moves here. And I'm going to short it. I'm going to buy a 3X inversion shares. That basically, when the market goes down 1 point, you gain 3. Because I'm looking at these guys, I'm like, wow, these guys are like actually making a ton of money doing it. And so I put it in. And you know what happened? I lost my money 3 times as fast. The 3X thing cannot be understated. If you want to get into stock markets and stuff, if you see an X, you take very careful note of what that means. That does not mean it's 3 times as cool. That means that you will lose 3 times as much. So basically, I went in and bought all these inverse shares and then immediately started just like losing like way more than before. We're like, you know, like $60-$80 gone in a day. And then I'm just like, you know, in a pan. I used to just be looking at the app like, oh, this kind of sucks. Now I'm looking at it like, dude, like you're going to like, you know, you're actually going to lose like all of this. Like you're going to have to, because what you don't want to do is you want to, if you lose some money, you want to like hold on to it because you want sooner it'll come back up and you don't really profit or lose until you actually sell, until you turn it into cash. So I was like, nah, I'm just going to hold it. It's going to suck, but I'm going to hold steady. And I wish this story ended with, sure enough, I did. And it pulled up, but it didn't. It kept on happening. And then I was setting my alarm to wake up like an hour before the markets start up, which around here is about like 5:30 in the morning. One cool thing about getting older is like waking up early is like not a problem anymore. Even though I have no reason to be up early at all, it has become so, so much easier. So, I was doing that and I'd wake up just freaked out, and freaked out that things are getting good, which is the bizarre position you find yourself if you decide to be a short seller, is that the good news is fucking bad news to you. So I would wake up at 5 a.m. and then like watch the news and stuff and just be praying that this was going to be a Great Depression. I was like, please God, like just go all the way down. Like fucking people need to start jumping out of buildings ASAP. Like, please do not be a good market right now. And it was. It was like right around the middle of March and everything started picking back up. And I just started feeling like sick because I'm betting on failure. You know, like I can't like keep in my mind those two things of like not wanting the economy to crash and then also not wanting to like totally lose my ass on a short sell. So I just accepted the losses. I just bowled out. I just bowled out and I ended up just buying some normal stocks, which are doing okay now. They're just kind of pulling it back up. So the stock market kind of tumble and stuff towards the middle of March was never for me. It started getting real. And then I started like really thinking like, oh, like I need like to make sure I have cash on hand. I need to start selling things that I own I have all this, like gear, I had a good year last year. So I bought some, like, you know, I bought a new computer and I kind of had the old one just laying around in case I needed it. And immediately I was like, I got to sell that stuff. I got to start like actually putting in the work and getting it listed and going through all that nonsense. So I did that. And then, once the governor came on and gave kind of the stay at home order and, you know, not to gather and the CDC guideline, might have been right before that CDC guidelines, I found a stash of surgical masks in my shed. Long story how this got there, but they were there. And I went to go give some to my landlady because she's older and lives there. And while I'm doing that, she invites me over to have dinner with her friends and stuff. And I couldn't reach her on the phone. So I just went in while she was like having all these like people over at her house. And I have the masks in hand. And I said, you know, I was like, the governor has made an order that, you know, we have to socially distance. And, you know, for your safety and mine, I can't join you for dinner. And so all the guests, I could hear them afterwards too, kind of being like, oh, well, it's not really that big of a deal. I immediately had my mask on by then. I even had these like disposable gloves I'd wear. My landlady who you hear a lot about on this show, she's a character, you know, she lives in the same house and she's a total hippie, major, like 60, it's like probably, I'm gonna guess like 66 year old, like hippie lady, very sweet. You know, gets very angry quickly about things. So I just try to kind of keep her, you know, keep things happy. But for the most part, you know, she lets me kind of do whatever I want in my space. The only thing she did get onto me about was for weed, smoking weed, that is. It turns out there's other ways you can consume cannabis that I've become a fan of. But that's it. That's the only time that there's ever been kind of an issue and stuff. So, you know, super nice, but doesn't watch TV, doesn't read the news, remains nice and ignorant about a lot of things, which is not a bad place to be. You know, like I think a lot of people get all worked up because they know too much. They're too into it. So she knew like the bare minimum and was basically treating me like she treated me during the fires. We had the fires here 2 years ago. And as soon as like it started coming in, like near our city, I started packing up my car. She was on vacation somewhere and I had this foreign exchange French chick in the house taking her room. And I went to her, like the French lady, more like a girl, she's like a college chick. And I asked her, I was like, do you have any, like anyone you know here? Like, is there a place that I could bring you? Because we might have to evacuate. And so, you know, she panics and she calls up my landlady and then my landlady calls me and is like, oh, you really upset so-and-so. And I was like, lady, I see the fire on the hills. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how bad this could get. And because you literally could, go outside and see them on the mountains, the fires. This is after like weeks of not being able to breathe outside and stuff. And she was like, it's probably not going to be a big deal. But she did tell me to, if I call her again, to find all of her valuables and like documents and birth certificates and stuff, and to evacuate the house with them if it really comes down to it. Luckily, it didn't. But she was kind of thinking about that because now I've kind of outed myself as someone who will worry a lot about a sort of panicky news story. Like even I kind of thought this virus thing was at first. I thought it was just kind of a news panic kind of thing, kind of like SARS and H1N1. I even made a post about it on Facebook, which I totally take back. I won't delete it, but, we had all this shit all the time, Ebola and all this, and it never was that big of a deal. It scared people a lot, but it wasn't. So I take that back. I was dumb. I was wrong. Facebook, you're right. But anyways, so her knowing my panic about the fires and then suddenly seeing me with masks on and gloves on and giving her masks, she had the same attitude for a few days. You know, she's kind of looked at me like I was crazy, still had people over and stuff. And then one day I go to the patio and I see a local newspaper had a big black front page that said, wash your hands, stay inside, be safe. Like that was it, just black with those white text, super scary looking. And she was reading it and had this look on her face. She was like, I want you to know that I'm going to start taking this seriously. And, you know, I'm not going to be having any other people over and stuff. And, you know, that's so that kind of started it kind of for our whole household to just kind of take it more serious. But, you know, I told her, I was like, for her, it's really hard because, you know, she's from a generation that doesn't have, you know, Facebook and all this kind of stuff. So like having people over to talk to is the only way that she can communicate. So, you know, I told her that too. I was like, I understand, you know, like for me, like I'm like just a single guy with my cat. Like I can stay in my room and play video games. It's what I usually do anyways. It's really not a big change for me, but, you know, for people like that and for friends of mine, you know, who need like human interaction because they're like normal people who, you know, aren't like autistic and weird like me about groups of folk. You know, they need it. And there's a lot of my friends, you know, that I've seen, I won't call you out, but you know who you are. I've seen you on your little like Snapchats videotaping your friends and stuff and, you know, having your little get togethers and just pretending that you're too dumb to understand that no gathering means no gathering. But I kind of don't blame you because I know that it's like it's an emotional like support that, you know, I would rather you in this. Take this with a grain of salt, but there are some people out there who I would rather bend the rule a little bit for them, you know, let them have the 6 feet apart person or whatever, because they're going to lose their fucking mind if they can't do that, or they're just going to just cheat and then just not do anything. Now you shouldn't fucking videotape yourself doing that. And that's not because, you know, the cops are going to come after you or, you know, or what you're doing is super wrong. It's because we're jealous. It's that simple, guys. If you record a TikTok video of you and your friends having the time of your life, it just pisses us off because we want that. Because we want to do that so bad. And we can't have it. And you can because you just don't know no better. So yeah. So if you're doing that, just know, like, just keep it on the DL, okay? Like, don't be proud of it. There are a lot of things that we do in life that we shouldn't do and that we shouldn't be proud of. And the least you can do is just hide it. Just fucking hide it. So, you know, for me, it's been okay because I'm used to kind of being alone and stuff. I don't really mind it. You know, I got my little kitty cat and I got my video games. Finishing up my campaign on Fallout 4, a great way to a free and effective birth control option is to tell women about your Fallout 4 characters. It's a great way to prevent STDs is to meet a chick and tell them, oh yeah, so I have this my character is a girl. It's just because I like to hear the girl dialogue. Okay. She's like an undercover agent. All right. For this thing called the Institutes, and the Institute is like making all of these little synths. And so like, she's pretending she's being a part of it, but really she's on the undercover. She's trying to like, you know, pull them out. And she's like really fucking good with guns. She's like super good with pistols and stuff. Like she can like, you know, like shoot this like guy, like a mile away, no problem. And she has a genetic mutation that makes her immune to radiation, which is like really important in the story. It's a great, great way to avoid STDs. Let's talk about your Fallout characters. you know, I've been doing that, finishing that up. Also, Black Mesa, been playing Black Mesa. Just finished that game. That's the Half-Life remake. I only like single player games, especially now that I'm in my 30s. Like I cannot go on and listen to like 5-year-olds say the N-word to me and call me a pussy. I can't have that. Like, it's just, I'm too sensitive, and I'm not that good. Like, anytime I would try to play, you know, online games with people, I'm not that good. I need to be able to pause it and like have a drink and do something. Like, you have to, it's a job. If you're playing an online game, it's like you're going to work. Like, you have to like be sober and like, you know, follow directions and do all this stuff. It's just not fun. My friends, one of my best friends really likes Counter-Strike and has tried many times to get me to play it, even including buying it for me. And I got to explain to him, like, dude, you're too good. You are like, you're like Jimi Hendrix, like asking me to jam with you. Like, hey, come on over here. And maybe you can kind of like play a little lick. Like, you're too good. Like, it's an embarrassment for me to be like on your team or anything. Cause like, you know, they can shoot people without even seeing them. And I'm just running around like an idiot, you know? So, I don't play the multiplayer games. I'm too sensitive for that. Besides video games, I've also been watching a lot of movies, and also not giving a damn about copyright violations for downloading. I'm poor, okay? I got no choice. So, been yiffying it up. Lots of good yiffy movies I've been watching. Probably the best one I saw recently was Westworld, the 1973 version that they based the TV show off of. I'm a big fan of the TV show. I love that show. It's kind of too full of itself sometimes. And I think it's now I especially believe that because I've seen the movie, and the movie is just so much more fun. Like, you forget in the show that it's about a fun theme park. It's not like this whole moral dilemma about consciousness and like doing the right thing or being good and evil. In the original Westworld, they just have fun, and then the robots get out of control. But it's so much fun. Like the one of the early scenes, after one of the visitors, sort of the main character, finally gets the courage to like shoot a guy at a bar. That scene's pretty good. But then there's the next one. The guy he shoots comes back to find him in the hotel room. He's taking a shower. And so the guy is called the gunslinger. His name is Yul something, the actor, but it's amazing. If you haven't seen this movie, you got to see it. But he's looking around the hotel room for him. And then the main character comes right behind him with a gun and then shoots him. And he does this badass, like classic, like fall out the window move, which I love. Like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, yes, like this is the Wild West, like fun zone right here, because it was that classic, like pre-CGI, just a fucking stunt dude just flying out the back of a window, like a second story window. It just was so satisfying. And then the main character goes, oh, was he giving you any trouble, miss? It's so good. And then also the bar fights they have, like the brawls. I mean, how many people besides me, like how many times have you seen in a movie where they like grab a dude and like throw him across the bar and just want to do that so bad? Cause that's like been like a dream of mine, just to have that happen. Just that classic where they grab him, you know, by like the collar and the pants, and they just slide him across the bar, like through like bottles of whiskey with little X's on it and stuff. I want to do that so bad. I think I lack, first of all, the upper body strength to pull that off. But it's so much fun. I wonder if they're like lighter in Westworld. They explain that the guns only work because they're heat seeking, but obviously, like, everything else would not work. I mean, it's especially with the swords, like this, like, you know, if you had a sword. Well, they say, I'm sorry, I should back up. They say they're heat seeking because obviously, like, how do you know that you're not shooting a guest? And that's something in the TV show they talk about a lot, like the difference between like the guests and the hosts and mixing them up. I'm surprised they didn't touch that at all, because that would be like the first like accident would be thinking someone's a host and then like grabbing a fucking knife and like gutting them, you know, because there's no way to block that, I guess. I mean, they have them like watching, maybe the other hosts like turn into security guards really quick and like break that up from happening. Also, you know, speaking of the park and the, you know, kind of control behind the scenes, it's vintage 70s with the like spinning tape in the background and stuff. And, you know, another thing I like it better than the show is that they care about the park being fun. The first thing you hear them talk about is, or not one of the first things, but something that they mention is that one of this like nerdy guy in Westworld wants to be the sheriff. But there's already a sheriff host, and you hear him on the phone, like the control room guy talking to the park going, just give him the badge, like change the story up. We'll get it all worked out. Like, he can do whatever he wants. Like, if he wants to be the sheriff, it's not even a question. It's just taking the badge off the host and then giving it to him, which I love. Like, that's like the wonder of it. It's you know, it's Michael Crichton, who did Jurassic Park 2. And it's that same like sense of like of you know, with Jurassic Park. Like, you know, Jurassic Park is cool, not because it's like scary monsters out of control. It's because those scenes where the park is working, and you have that just wonder, especially if you're a kid in the 90s, like just thinking about like being in that Jeep and seeing a T-Rex and this being like a real park you could go to and have fun. That's something with the original Westworld that is there that I didn't realize I was missing from the show, is that Westworld's fun, guys. It's fun. It's not all, you know, these evil, like, people, like, raping each other and, you know, just, like, a lot of moral dilemmas about consciousness. It's a theme park to have fun in. And it was great. Okay, so this is the part of the show where I would like to be introducing a guest and talking about what they're about to do and then having a nice little like 30 to hour long conversation with them about goofy stuff. But sadly, this episode is just going to be me, guys. Sorry, it's just going to be Jaywalk. I tried. I really fucking tried, guys. I reached out to someone who is a good friend of mine about doing the show. And to be fair, it was a lack of preparation on my part that I'm realizing is why it failed. You know, I was a little upset whenever it didn't work out because I thought that this person was sort of just abandoning me, basically, was just kind of wasting my time, and instead of doing an interview with me, just wanted to smoke weed and have an excuse to break the quarantine with me. I was kind of pissed about that, but, you know, I really thought about it, especially now that I'm recording my own stuff. You have to be prepared for this stuff. You know, you think you see Joe Rogan just sit there, smoke some weed, talking to people, you know, and you see other, you just hear other podcasters just have conversations. As a host, you have to have things written out ready to go. That's what I learned immediately while I was doing that, because I had like three topics I like wrote barely. And I was hoping, you know, I just expected this person just to do like all the talking for me, and I would just kind of come in. And immediately, as soon as I started like recording, I would ask something and then get like a yes or no answer, or sometimes just a head nod. And it started to get me upset. And I was like, this isn't an interview. And then, you know, I wanted to also be like Joe Rogan and like smoke weed and stuff with my guests. And then that had its own issues, because now my guest is too stoned is too stoned to talk to me. It's too like worried about what they're going to say. And then on my end, I'm like kind of buzzed, and when I'm buzzed, you know, I'm like, my voice sucks and I start going off on tangents. And so I learned then has to be written down and I have to do this stuff like sober. I can come up with ideas high, which I do all the time, which is fun, but I cannot be in front of the mic intoxicated. I'm not there yet. I'm not ready yet. maybe one day I'll get to that level where I can, but for now, like I have to be like stone cold sober. It's why I wanted to do this like early in the day. I was going to do it late at night and stuff, but I was like, wake up, have some caffeine and like, you know, treat it like a job. Don't just treat it like anything. You know, I got kind of mad while we were doing it and I unplugged the microphones actually. And was like doing this half-ass, like I'm going to roll it up and go home. And then, you know, it was kind of a bluff. I kind of wanted to get the guest to fight back a little bit, which worked. You know, he or she said, you know, okay, well, how about I'll just ask you questions? And so we did that, but that's just stupid. Then it's just me just talking, which I'm doing right now, which I have plenty of the show about. So, you know, it was about 3 hours on a Monday night. This person's too stoned. Pretty much, like I said, the whole thing became a ruse to just hang out and smoke weed at a distance. We did not share anything. We were well far apart, but it just turned into that, which, you know, was still kind of cool. I wasn't like, oh God damn, I'm leaving right now instead of seeing the only other person besides my landlady in 2 months. So yeah, I did stick around a little bit for that. And so in addition to not being prepared with topics, which I cannot stress enough, you have to have topics. You cannot, it's just like radio. You cannot have dead air. You cannot sit there. You can't even go, you gotta throw, like, this is what's been hard with recording this today. I've been stopping and starting a lot. I'm gonna have to edit this, which fucking sucks, but I'm gonna do it. Is that you have to keep it going. There can be no ums. You must keep topics going. Right now I have a list on my computer that I'm reading and slightly forgetting about and coming back to, but you must have that. And in addition, if you're doing this whole thing on your own, you have to run the sound and like the microphones. I have to look right now at a little level meter and make sure that's all working out right and talk, which is like trying to like sing and play guitar at the same time. Not as hard, but what is that hard is I tried to kick it up a notch. This show is called Lower Your Expectation. The title Lower Your Expectation is becoming more and more like the theme of this whole show. It's becoming more and more like relevance to it because I've had so many crazy ideas for this show that were just too hard to be fairly frank, you know, like a lot of crazy skits and like hiring voice artists and, you know, I can save those for later. I also want to keep them in the back burner so I don't run out of ideas. But one of my wacky, funny ideas I had was to do a soundboard. I had this soundboard, it had like Billy Madison clips and like, you know, audience noises and funny sounds. And, you know, I was gonna be like, this is gonna be like I'm on Howard Stern or something. I'm gonna be able to, you know, talk to someone and then like hit a button, have a goofy sound, and then we like laugh at it. Didn't work out. That's too much of me to do at the same time. Talk, run sound, and run a soundboard. I couldn't do it. And so what would happen, and maybe whenever I'm less embarrassed about this, I'll release it. But I would be listening to this poor comedian who's like, I'm just dragging to do this interview, say anything funny. And I would stop the conversation to go, ha, 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 like, LOL, Jeff, LOL, like just something like stupid, and it stopped the whole show, and I just had to abandon it immediately. And then that, whenever it was all said and done, that was like one of the big complaints I got from this person, was that like the soundboard is not funny. Sorry, I thought it was. I learned a lesson. Thank you. I was unprepared on content, but I'm not used to content. I'm used to like the technical side, so I spent a lot of time getting all the microphones ready. You know, I went and got like extension cables for the microphones and the headphones for the guest. And like, you know, I spent a lot of time getting it up there. So I was like legit upset that this person, to me, felt like they were just backing out, you know, my hypothesis at the time was that they just didn't want to say no to me because they didn't want to be mean, which is a Californian thing that I can't stand. Just say no. I think they expected me, honestly, just not even to do this, you know, because like many things, you're like, oh, I'm going to make a podcast and you just don't ever do it. But for this, I really, really wanted to do it. And so I was heartbreaking, you know, that it was not happening. And then I left and, you know, I think she felt a little guilty too, because she started, not necessarily a she, guys. I call everyone she or he, but this person, you know, felt bad and started like mentioning other comics that I could talk to and, ideas for the show and stuff. And, you know, I just didn't even want to like go, I didn't want to go through that again. I had like a brass ring ready to go. I had this guy who I'm going to have on the show soon. I don't want to spoil it, but he is what you would call infamous more than famous. A lot of people really don't like him. I think he's hilarious. But I was going to have him on the show for this episode, and he had some sort of drama with his girlfriend or something and couldn't record with me last night. And so I woke up today and I decided I'm not even gonna like try to fight to do this. This is just me. So, you know, if you would like to be a guest on Lower Your Expectation, please email me, you know, go ahead and email me, message me. Cause I'd love to have you on. I would love to have guests on who are interesting. And that's really all it is. You don't have to be the funniest guy in the world. You know, just interesting. I like interesting people, especially controversial people. That's what's fun about this show, is that this show is purely a passion project. I'm self-hosting it all. This is just fun for me. So that's the same attitude with the guests. Like, you know, if you're a guest who's like, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to, you know, get in trouble for what I'm saying. Now, I don't want Nazis. I don't want stuff like that. I don't want like, you know, like goose stepping, like right wing Nazis. This is not, the show will not turn into that. Everyone calm down. Don't worry. But I do want people who have controversial ideas, you know, even especially if I don't agree with them, that's the best. You know, just because I want to hear it. And if you're just goofy and funny, you know, I definitely want you, because this is supposed to be a show that is just about being entertaining. That's it. You know, there's no agenda on here. I don't care what your political parties are. I don't care if you smoke weed or don't. You know, I just want interesting conversations with people. It's the spice of life for me. I love talking to interesting people. So instead of interview, I consider this sort of my demo reel to you, the listener. If you or someone you know would make a cool, interesting guest on this show, please have them hit me up. Well, that's my show, guys. Thank you so much for bearing with me and listening to this pilot episode of Lower Your Expectations. They will get better. I promise you they'll get better. I'm working very, very hard. I got some funnier stuff coming around the corner. Got some good guests. Some I've reached out to already. Some I'm too scared to, and I'm trying to find the courage to reach out to them. But if anyone would like to reach out to me to be on the show and, you know, thinks that they're funny, and I can set up remote interviews and stuff like that. So no worries about the COVID. Email me at loweryourexpectationpodcast@gmail.com. Oh yeah, it's a Gmail account, baby. loweryourexpectationpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have like anything funny you want to share with me, or maybe some questions you want me to answer, that would be cool too. Please give me contents. And with that, I want to thank my friends for wishing me a happy birthday. And I want to wish my friend Jay Wilkinson, who turns like 58 tomorrow or something, also a happy birthday. Even though your art is a disgrace, you're pretty much like a tracer, right? Like you just like take photos and turn them into paintings. That's amazing. Wow, dude. That's like pretty much what I did as like a 5-year-old, but I guess you've somehow made a career out of that. So, you know, good luck to you. Thanks for bringing the virus from New York to Texas, and I will see you guys later. But before you go,
No.